the Goldstein eFuturist Chime Forum 2015, and we have an unbelievable futurist, Daniel Kraft. And as a physician and a leader, you are right on target with what you shared with the audience about the implications of digital and genomic science on medicine. Can you share some of the key highlights?
I think the highlight for clinicians today, for healthcare IT leaders, as we had here in the audience, is to appreciate, you know, how fast some of these technologies are moving, how many of them are actually here today, and the opportunity to meld them into our clinical practice. So if it's, let's say, genomics, we don't need to wait for the $100 genome. We're at a $1,000 genome today. Most folks don't need to be fully sequenced, because if you presented to your primary care doc with your genome on a disk drive, they wouldn't know what to do with it. But worse, even with technologies like consumer 23andMe type profiles, has your pharmacogenomics on it, certain risk profiles. The challenge is that information doesn't get into the clinician workflow today. And so I think part of my message is a lot of these technologies are here or really going to get faster, cheaper, and more available. And we can start smartly integrating them into our healthcare to improve outcomes, lower cost, empower the patient, the clinician, the healthcare system. And as things are moving so quickly, this is a healthcare IT crowd. Moore's Law is not just happening in healthcare IT. It's with social networks, 3D printing, robotics, AI. How do you think about, how do you, not just future-proof, but future plan, whatever you're doing in the healthcare realm, to integrate them in smart ways? Because what used to be $1 million, you know, DARPA project 10 years ago, now is an app you might be able to download. So lots of power.
You did one of the best jobs I've seen in a long time of profiling this emerging technology that's on the verge of being practical. And what will people adopt, and will we get paid for it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, healthcare is like politics. It's local. So will it get paid for in California, where we're based, or at a Kaiser or a VA? It's very different than a fee-for-service in Nebraska. And the challenge is, you know, some of the regulatory bodies FDA and others aren't necessarily thinking exponentially. How do you, or the payers as well, how do you value some of these emerging things that are here today? I think the answer is not just pilots, but to find out what your unmet needs are, managing hypertension and diabetes in terms of a big market. What technologies are off the shelf today that you could be utilizing and plug them in, and not necessarily always worry about billing for every app or device, but showing that when we use them, it'll dramatically improve blood pressure control or hemoglobin A1C in diabetics. And get an ROI that's intuitive today without waiting for a 10-year outcome study.
What strikes me is that us as citizens and people who are sometimes patients, we're using these devices every day. So people have adopted these. We're re-engineering our lives. And many times, because doctors or clinicians say, how am I going to get paid for it? You're absolutely right. They need to do what's right to improve my care and my health.
Well, if you shift the incentives as well, this value-based healthcare, which is quickly emerging, if I'm your primary care doc and I have a panel of 1,000 patients and I get a bonus at the end of the year for having good blood pressure control and hemoglobin A1Cs by using some of these connected devices and services, boom, that sets the curve dramatically. And I think in being able to provide that analytics and feedback loop back to the doc, this idea that I mentioned that healthcare today is very intermittent and reactive, is going to shift to be more proactive and continuous with some of these tools. And because we're in this exciting consumerization era of healthcare, I just ordered my Apple Watch 3 minutes after they went on sale. I still have to wait a month. Is, you know, to the point where we're going to be touching our health all the time, kind of like the Google Now or the little nudge on your watch, will be for your physician or for your patient a way to stay connected to your own health and wellness, or in terms of disease management. So I think it's an exciting time where things that used to require having to go into the clinical setting are going to become ubiquitous and connected to our bodies in surprising ways. We're still at the early part of this whole explosion.
No, absolutely. 70% of people track their health, but still only 20% are using technology. So many people are still using pen and paper. And the real question is, for frequent flyers of the healthcare system, are we more tech literate, or do we want all these devices? If I'm a frequent flyer using the healthcare system, am I going to adopt this technology?
Well, I don't, none of us, whether you're a frequent flyer or the most Gen Xer who's got every app in the world, wants to be logging into 10 APIs and different devices. We may track your data, but you need that data to become actionable information. And it's different if you're training for a marathon or managing heart disease. And I think the best way to analyze this is this uberification kind of healthcare. You know, so much of healthcare is inefficient, takes a long time to get scheduled, you don't get the data, you don't know what's happening. Uber kind of took existing technologies, layered them up, and now it's transformed how we travel for many of us, or Airbnb, how we can get a hotel room. That sensibility that the digital natives want, and even older generations, to be able to touch your health, have the payments taken care of, have transparency, have connectivity, have sort of smart analytics, you know, where's the cab coming to you? You know, where's your lab tests? Where are they in the trajectory? All is doable today with a blend of smart user interface, design thinking, and setting up the privacy and other important components in ways that we can all empower ourselves to improve healthcare and move to be much more proactive and continuous with our information.
What was particularly powerful about your talk was some specific examples, because I think, like cardiology, if you could elaborate on that cardiology example, because I think the reinvention of care and health is going to be based on these specific solutions that really solve a problem today.
Well, there's small ones out on the market. The AliveCor device for doing your EKG on the phone is one small example that's out there that can be powerful for a patient with atrial fibrillation to manage their disease, or as a triage tool. I mentioned HeartFlow, a Stanford spin-out that can do a quick CT scan and analyze your coronary blood vessels without a traditional angiogram. That's going to be disruptive to how we analyze cardiac disease and treat it in smarter, earlier forms. Or echoes that can be done with MRIs. So it's this blending of technologies that's going to enable better insight at lower cost that can hopefully make more tuned, personalized precision medicine. We're in this precision medicine era. At the early stages, it's still the trick to meld that data and make it useful.
So what is your recommendation for clinicians, nurses, doctors, other folks in the healing profession, social workers in adopting this technology? What should they do today?
Well, it's not just about adopting. I think it's hopefully helping drive some of this change by saying, hey, I can go to the Apple Store, Best Buy, and buy a connected blood pressure cuff or glucometer and try that with my brittle diabetics and get a better feedback loop and maybe use a social network app to help their compliance and their family support. So it's not waiting for the future to come. It's helping, I think folks can use some of these existing apps and tools. And yes, it may not always be reimbursed or fully figured out in the regulatory sense. But if it's a watch that can track heart rate, maybe that you can use that to modulate someone's beta blocker use. So I think part of what people can do is be a little bit of solve their own problems by looking at technology where it is and where it's going to be, and help bring folks from other fields to help address the pain points you have, whether it's tracking falls in an elderly grandparent or managing meds or communicating with your inpatient and outpatient team. I think everyone can be part of the solution and sort of get out of their silos.
That is a great recommendation for taking action. Just, we all are part of the problem and we're all part of the solution. And I'm going to follow your advice and we're going to go buy these devices because they're much more affordable, and we're going to go help people help themselves.
It's not just about devices. These devices on our wrists are going to be somewhat commoditized. They're shrinking into our phones, into our clothes. It's going to be more about the data and what we do with it. That's where the big money is going to be. I like to call it predictalytics, or this, as we can all become data donors, just like when we drive with Google Maps or Waze, we share our location speed. And in exchange, we get the map and the traffic and the better route to work. And I think that kind of sensibility is coming as we start to be more used to being socially networked. I chair the medicine track at Singularity University and run this program, Exponential Medicine, each year. And what's really interesting is to see people cross-fertilize and crowdsource and think differently by melding different clinical fields, different technologies, and realize that, you know, just as I mentioned, you know, the smartphone of 7 years ago looked magical then. Now it looks like an antique. And we need to be looking to where the puck is going to be, as Wayne Gretzky says, as we skate to a better healthcare future.
Well, the other key point is, how do I get monetized in that? If I share my data, can I get monetized? That will drive faster adoption. Second point that I love that you said, so you said wearables and then you called them incitables. So in 5 years, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the state of the art of incitables and how they're changing healthcare.
For my friend Lucien Engelen, but the point is, we already have implantable defibrillators, pacemakers, beneath the skin RFIDs you can use today. So we're moving quickly in that realm. And we should start thinking about not just the data from our standard wrists or phones, but this internet of the body, the internet of things, our social networks, our all this information, the exposome, where we've been, can all come together in the systems medicine or systems healthcare approach. So it's not any one device or any piece of data, it's the integration of all that. And that's going to take AI, analytics, predictalytics, and everybody sort of hopefully crowdsourcing and sharing data from the silos that we have amongst different EMRs and academic groups and pharma companies, for really, I think, shift and reinvent medicine and biopharma.